Lord, thank you for today, for a place to meet, for the sunshine, for being in control. Father, remind us of what this day means, how it solidifies all the promises you made, and remind us that we're all held accountable. And this day is absolute assurance that we will. Father, thank you for loving us first. We ask you to meet the needs of so many people in our church family that need a physical touch in that process, that you would draw them to yourself, make yourself even more real than ever to them. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Jay, we're talking about the resurrection actually today, because there's a lot of people still do not believe that that's a fact. Jay Warner Wallace was a cold case detective, and that was his job, where he would try to solve cases that were very, very old. And the first time that he had heard a preacher preach on the resurrection of Jesus, he just thought it was an example of blind faith. And surely the man couldn't have anything to, no supporting evidence for what he was saying, but he was intrigued by it. So because he was a detective, he started decided he would start trying to evaluate this cold case of the resurrection, Christ's death and rising again. And he did, and he used the same process in which he used in everyday life to solve problems. And he wrote a book out of it. You can buy it. It's called A Cold Case for the Resurrection, where in trying to prove really that it was false, another one of those situations, he came to the understanding that the resurrection was true, and he became a believer out of it. It's kind of funny. It's a lot of people on this day, they will take part in a church service, and what it does, it validates what they say they don't believe. You know, it's kind of funny, ironic, that out of the 2 days of the year that they might come, this is one of them, and it actually validates everything that's true, and yet they say they don't believe it. So that's what we're going to look at quickly, and I do realize I have much more, so I'm going to be skipping over a lot just for the sake of time, but I will put all the notes online if you are interested in reading any more of it, all right? Years and years ago, Lauren Easley, a humanitarian, what you call him, not a sociologist, anthropologist, this is what he said. He said, man is the cosmic orphan. He is the only creature in the universe who asks why. You know, everything else operates off of instincts, all the animals. He said, but we ask why. Other animals are guided by that, but we're the only one. That Amber Alert's been going off since 12:30 this morning. Is that my phone? No, that ain't my phone, but that's about the third time this morning it's happened. The same one out of Monroe. Yes, all right. The problem is, if there is no God or if there is no immortality, then not only is man a cosmic orphan thrown into existence without a purpose, and that's what he said, without God, the very thing that man so desperately needs to give him some value in his life is what he's missing. The predicament of the modern man is not simply that he is an orphan, but that he's an orphan oriented by nature toward the very things that he needs but that he cannot have. He describes the predicament of modern man as lost in a universe without God, that he truly is a cosmic orphan. He's thrown into life as an accidental product of nature, and he faces inevitable extinction and death. His lot is only made bitter and more tragic by the fact that he of all creatures is aware of it. He's lost and he knows it. The animals, they don't think the same way that think we do. But we do. Because man has killed God, and by doing so, he's reduced himself to an accident of nature. When he asks the question, why, his cry is lost in silence of the recesses of space. So when he dies with no hope. Wow, can you imagine that? I can't imagine that. I can't imagine what it'd be like to lose a loved one and you didn't believe there was an eternal place where they could go because they had made a commitment to Christ. I understand why people that lose loved ones become alcoholics, drug addicts, commit suicide. You know, actually, if this is true, what do we do with our predicament? Well, there ain't much you can do. You can't commit suicide and get out of it. You can do what the rest of the world does. We have so many amusement things that we get involved in to take our mind off of the thought that really, who are we and what's going to happen to us? Or we just try to live noble, even though there's no God that gives us any nobility. Or you can go against the thought of modern man and say, you know what? They don't really know if God exists or not. So there's a pretty good chance that he does. You know, if you're sitting out here today and you say God exists, even if you knew 95% of everything there was to know in the world, he could still exist in 5% you don't know anything about. You ever thought about that? That's the way that works. You don't know everything. And I don't either. There was a man in the first service said his wife knew everything. I don't know about that. I've never met anyone. I knew some people that thought they knew everything, but they don't. Thus, in killing God, he's killed himself as well. We don't have anything. So life has significant value, but without Christ, we don't. Jordan Peterson, in his 12 Rules book, and he was a clinical psychologist, not really a believer. He's on the verge of it if he gets there before he dies. He's been really, very sick, but deeply brilliant. And he evaluates all this stuff, and he uses the Bible as a mandate, actually, to tell us we need to live this way because of that. And this guy came up to him, and really a young man, at one of his talks, and he asked him, he says, why shouldn't I kill myself? You know, instead of doing all this crazy talk that you normally hear from secular psychologists, he said, listen. He said, you're a being worth something. And he said, you don't own yourself. You may think you own some things, but you don't own yourself, and you don't have the right, actually, to do that. And went on, and actually, at the end, the guy said, you know, I won't kill myself. But if this is all, you know, if this is all we had to look forward to, you'd probably be better off. If there is no God, and if you're not going to live in eternity forever, you probably might be better off than in this hellhole world that we live in right now. And if Easley's right, then that's right. You know, that's but I don't think he's right, and he doesn't know everything, right? An atheist interviewed John Piper on the radio a few years ago, and this is what if you don't know who John Piper is, he's deeply brilliant. He's a preacher in Minneapolis, actually where a lot of this nonsense has been going on for the last few months. But he interviewed on the public radio, this atheist interviewed him, and this is what he asked him. He asked Piper, he says, why do you practice voodoo? Y'all know what voodoo is, right? Y'all know what that is? He said that I was really unaware that I practice voodoo. How do you calculate, how do you come to the conclusion that I practice voodoo? Can you explain that to me? That's what he asked the guy. He said, you know, believing that a man can die and rise again and that can have an effect on people far away. Sort of like sticking pins in dolls in order to hurt somebody that's far away. So he saw the resurrection in affecting people's lives a long time after his voodooism. He said, nope, I don't exactly agree with you on that. I don't practice voodoo. The resurrection, that's what we're talking about. There's two things about it, and I'm gonna surmise some of it just for the sake of time. There's two questions about that. Number one, is it true? And number two, if it is true, what does that mean to me? How does it affect me? There's two ways. If it is true, you're going to have a good account of God one day. I don't care how you live your life. You can say all you want to that the earth is flat, and I don't think it is. Did you know there's some people still believe the earth is flat? Yeah. You know, just some logic, if you start to look at the sun come up and the way the trees do, kind of tells you probably not flat, all right? But if it is true or not, does it affect me? It will. Whether you believe it or not, you know, just because you don't think the ball is red, if the ball is red, the ball is still red. That's one of the questions. Is it true? Look what it says. It says, if you confess with your mouth that the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart, my thing came off. That's why I was pulling off my head. And raise him from the dead, you will be saved. Did you know? Without understanding that God was Christ in the flesh, that he died and rose again. Did you know without that, there's no way you will be saved and go to heaven? You know, we saw that when we went through the book of John for months. You know what John absolutely made clear? If you sit here and you say Jesus was not God and you never come to the realization and believe that, there's no way you'll ever be saved. You'll be damned and you'll go to a devil's hell if you don't believe that Jesus was God in the flesh. And the second part is that God raised Jesus from the dead. That's what it says, right? If you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead. Why? Because that solidifies everything that God's been talking about for the last 6,000 years. You know, without this part, the meaning question is this: so what if it really happened? Does it really make any difference whether I believe it or not? Is it really going to change anything? Does it make any difference in my life? Why is that? Why is that important? Because of this. There's a lot of people who just simply reject Christianity because they say, we don't believe Jesus rose again. And so they don't investigate anymore. Oh, you know, we can't reproduce that, so we don't believe that. And so they say, that's it. We don't believe that. And then some people reject it because they can't really say, well, even if he did rise from the dead, what difference does it make? Is it really going to make any difference? It does. It makes all the difference. That's what Bartholomew said in the movie Risen. You know, I don't know if you get PureFlix or not, or I don't know if it's on any other situation, but at least this past month, they've been playing this movie called Risen. And it's showing the death and resurrection of Christ from a Roman soldier who is in charge of investigating the resurrection. It shows him being converted. Did any of y'all see that? It's a great one. I've never seen one that details a lot of the truth the way it does. You know, it even shows a lot of what happens, what they do with the people when they take them down off the cross. Why it would be hard for them to not produce the right body? I mean, they had to get it right because of the situation. But they interview Bartholomew there, and so this, what do they call him, a tribune? Maybe that's what his name was or something anyway. He wasn't just a centurion. And he says, and he asked Bartholomew when he interrogated him one-on-one, he says, does it make any difference? He said, it makes all the difference. And that's exactly right. If it is true, it changes everything. But a lot of people say, well, it's not going to affect me. No skin off my back. Oh, it's going to be a lot of skin off your back. The meaning of it is insignificant or irrelevant to what that really concerns them, so they don't care. That's where a lot of people are. The very nature of man requires that we, when I say the church, I don't mean the building, I don't mean the preacher, I mean the believers. If you call yourself a believer, you ought to have enough understanding of some general facts that you could help somebody. Why? You don't just have to take this because I say it. And that's what we're going to look at quickly. We have to give evidence, reason, and arguments that Jesus, that we're trying to share with people, that fact that he was real. He was a real person. Who do you find, who is written more about than any other person you'll ever find on any kind of history books? Jesus. Why? Because it's a fact. I mean, that's just it. If the church has no compelling reason for believing the biblical picture of Jesus, then we're just like well-trained animals, and we can be turned, regardless of what happens in our life, we'll fold and run and go do something else. Why? Because we don't have anything to base it on. You know, you don't decide to be a Christian and follow Christ by flipping a coin. That's not the way that works. And a lot of people think that's what we do. That's never what Jesus said. Never be afraid of the truth. He said, I am the truth. But that's exactly what it is. At the end of the day, faith that is not rooted in some sufficient evidences will disappear when trouble comes. That's exactly what happens. Why? Christianity has been criticized. It's been called the opaque for the people. I mean, the only reason they follow him is because of what they think he's going to do for them. Well, Job proves that ain't right. If you know who Job was, it's not Job, it's Job. Remember what had, he said, after everything he lost, he still followed God. What does it say? Though you slay me, I'll trust you. That's what we're talking about. That is, people follow Christ for that, and a lot of people do. Now, quickly, reason to believe. I don't know where you are. You might be in here, you don't believe in God, you don't believe in Jesus, you don't believe in resurrection. You know, that's fine. You got a 50-50 chance. You might be right and we may be wrong, or we may be right and you be wrong. The problem is, from an eternal standpoint, if we're right and you're wrong, you're in serious trouble. If you're right and we're wrong, it really ain't going to make a lot of difference, is it? But if it goes the other way, you're in serious trouble. Well, I believe God loves everybody. Oh, he does. And I believe he understands. No, he doesn't. Everybody thinks that we can just live the way we want to live and it really doesn't matter because Jesus is love and he understands. No, he doesn't. Go back and read Leviticus. Read how whatever, it said even if you unintentionally sin and it's pointed out to you, you have to go get a sacrifice and you have to bring it to the priest and they have to kill it and they have to take the blood. And if you're so poor, they would take flour. You have to bring it to the priest. He would transfer your guilt on that and pour it on. Everything had to be dealt with. There's no little sin. All sin is serious sin. But we kind of say, well, you know, it really doesn't matter. Oh, it's going to matter one day. I guarantee you. Reasons to believe the resurrection. Number one, it is the foundation of Christian teaching. If you don't have that, Christianity is gone. It is the only thing that separates it from Hinduism, Charles Colson was in India speaking. You remember he was the hatchet man for during the Watergate. And so whenever he would go speak, people wanted to hear him. And he's getting up there giving his testimony. And, you know, all these Hindus, they believe in millions of gods. So he's talking about his, and they're all shaking their heads. They agree. And he talked about Jesus. And everybody had their own guru, so they didn't really have any problem with it. They okayed it. Until he said, but the reason I'm a Christian is because of the resurrection. He said, everything got quiet. Why? That changes everything. You know, all those other gods, all, and they have plenty of them. No one ever, Muhammad, no one else ever claims to rise from the dead. Nowhere. So if you do away with Christianity, you do away with the resurrection, Christianity is done. And that's very one of the proofs. All they had to do is, we'll see in just a moment, is provide a body, and Christianity would have been over. And that's what Pilate said. He said, give me a body before sun goes down so we can stop all this stuff. And that's exactly what this Roman's doing. They go there. The reason why you need to see this one is they show you what happened to a lot of those people when they took them down off the cross. They just threw them over there in the ditch. They didn't bury them. So they're going over there digging through these people trying to find someone who hadn't totally decomposed. You said, oh, that's gory. That's just life, okay? They tried to find someone who still had the cross marks that they had crucified because they were distinct in their foot and in their hands. And so they were trying to find a body that they could bring and show Pilate that had those marks. So finally he came to one that was, it was beyond recognition, and he brought him and threw him down at the feet of Pilate. And he said, here you go. He says, you sure that's him? He said, no, but nobody else is either. So we're going to pass him off because nobody can tell whether he's him or not. He said, no, that's not going to work. All they had to do was produce a body. Do you know, it takes a lot more faith to be an atheist or an agnostic than it is to be a believer. Why? Because there are so many things that they claim they can't prove. They want us to prove anything. Why don't they prove something? They ain't proved anything. Darwin doesn't prove anything. I don't care if you're a Darwinist. There's so many holes in that thing. All you got to do is investigate a little bit. That's theory. That is all theory. Keep going. Number two is the object that we must have confidence in if we're going to be saved. That's what Paul said, isn't it? If you confess with your mouth that Jesus, that God raised him from the dead, you can be saved. Without that, there is none. Because you can't save yourself. You can't be baptized. And the possibility of the resurrection from the dead was not any more. Well, they had an easier time believing it then than we do now. Why? Why? Why would you believe that? You know, as we'll see in just a moment, Paul had a lot. They laughed him to scorn at Athens when he said, let me tell you about Jesus who rose from the dead. The greatest minds, the greatest philosophers were there at the education spot at Athens. That's where you went to dispel your ideas. And when they laughed him to scorn, because no one believed in a bodily resurrection. So we don't try to say, well, it was easier for them than it is us. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Paul had to deal with that problem, and that's exactly what he said. When he said he rose from the dead, they said, man, you're crazy. What did they call him? A babbler. It's like a bird, just making a bunch of noises and didn't make any sense. That's what they called him. That's actually the word that they used. It was the resurrection of everyone at the end of the world. They were not thinking about a resurrection on the moment. They said, oh, yeah, in the end, when all this is over, there will be a resurrection. We believe that. First century people were not any more prone. A lot of people try to say all kinds of stuff. Number four, the last reason. The reason to focus on the resurrection is that it was the heart of the earliest Christian preaching in Jerusalem. Go back and look at the facts. Just go back and read it. You know, evidence, that's exactly what it was. It was the willingness of the apostles to suffer for what they said they believed, and that is that they saw Christ and he had risen again. A historical, you know, bless your heart, you have to be careful now what they call history, because they've been rewriting it. And I don't even know, is Abraham still, was he still a president? Or was he a white supremacist? I don't even know anymore. What is it? Please don't get all your information off of Google. You know, go farther back than that, historical. Go back to look at the evidence. Don't just take somebody's word. You don't have to take my word for it. My goodness, I don't know everything. I know just about everything, but I don't know everything. Isn't that right? I remember a good friend of ours, his mother-in-law was, she was a piece of work. And but this guy was pretty well-rounded. He's a lot older than me, and he you know, he wasn't a brag or anything, but he didn't know a little bit about a lot of stuff. And so you start talking to him, and he could give you some facts on some stuff. And she told him one day, she said, you don't know everything. And he's right. She was right. He doesn't. No one knows everything, but there's a lot of stuff you can find out historically if you want to know. Meredith's been, one of her presents for Christmas was this ancestry stuff. You know, she wanted to have a DNA test. She wanted to get farther back than the free ancestry. I said, you don't need to go back any farther than what I know. All right? I know enough about our ancestors. We don't want to go back there any farther. All right? Just the ones I was around. But she did. And she found out some surprising stuff that she has a lot of Irish Scottishness in her, if they know what they're talking about. I still don't believe their algorithms can really pinpoint that stuff, okay? I'm kind of skeptical on that deal, okay? I don't really know. They ain't proven that to me yet. Anyway, I told her, just be careful, because some of that stuff is, you really can't prove it. You know, just take it with a grain of salt, all right? But there's a lot of things you can validate. If you go back to records, we've having some problems just because my great-great-grandfather, there were two guys in the same area, had the same name, and the best records were not kept in. But they think that we had a lot of Danish influence, all right? History. Does that affect me now? It doesn't. I understand I'm a sinner and I need to fix whatever my crazy ancestors did. I can't repeat it. You know, I know that. I know enough about that. Our main source of information about these early days is in the book of Acts. The book of Acts is a history book for the New Testament. As Chronicles, 1st and 2nd Chronicles in the Old Testament are history books. They chronicalize things that went on. The book of Acts shows you the birth of the church and what went through it. Who was the writer there? The same writer of the book of Luke. Luke the doctor. And what you find is, you know, when he starts out, he says, I'm writing to you, Theophilus. Pretty sure we come to the conclusion he was a Roman official. And he's writing to him about the things that have happened in the last 30 years. And he's trying to show with him Christianity is true and that he needs to take notice of it himself. So what does he do? I challenge you sometime. Go look at how detailed Luke records things that you can verify. Romans records show us the names of people that he named in this place, in this place, in this place. He was exactly on the money. You can verify it to this day. A lot of people say, well, that wasn't true. You start digging it up, and you say, yes, he knew what he was talking about. Why? He was a doctor. He did details. So he's trying to write a testament so this guy would understand it, but look what he does. Things that happened just in the last 30 years. It's not like it was 100 years ago. And he's writing, and basically, wouldn't you think, if Luke distorts it, and it's really not even close to the truth, this close to when it happened, this Roman official can go back and investigate it? Oh, yeah. Luke had to be telling the truth because this guy could disprove it. So you look at this and you see, my goodness, this is historical writings that are taking place here. That's exactly what it is. So when someone says, we believe in the resurrection, we believe in Jesus, it's not just all blind faith. You go back and look at the evidence of it. It's there. And we'll be held accountable because of that. Even if he rejects the divine inspiration of Scripture, it would be fine, absolutely unwarranted to assume that Luke's description of public verifiable events would be inaccurate, because Theophilus could verify it, right? Exactly. Now, we have to hurry, all right? Get to the next thing, because we're already out of time. Just 7 weeks after Jesus' death, Pentecost, Peter's preaching. Wow. He wasn't telling you every day's a Friday. What did he do to those Jews that were there, 3,000 of them? You killed him. You killed him. You nailed him on the cross. You killed him. But he rose again. Everything was built on the fact that they saw Jesus. He rose again. That was it. And when people say, oh, you just blind faith, that's not blind faith. Christianity is built on historical evidence. If you don't believe it, investigate it. You don't have to take my word for it. Jesus delivered up according to the definite plan and foreknowledge of God. You crucified and killed him by the hands of lawless men. But God raised him up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible for him to be held by it. This Jesus God raised up, and of that we are all witnesses. Just 7 weeks after it took place. He addressed the people of Jerusalem, and that's exactly what he said. How many times did he do that? When they were brought to Ananias, what did they hold them on charges? For preaching that Jesus had risen from the dead. That was the charge. His followers. You're talking about this guy who rose again, because they always saw him as a king who was a threat to the Roman Empire. That's why Rome wanted to squash it, because they didn't understand he wasn't talking about a physical empire. He was talking about a spiritual thing. So that's why they were all threatened. So that's why they arrested these guys and said, oh, no, y'all are promoting this falsity. So they're arresting them for it. That's why Christianity is offensively unique in a pluralistic age. That's why whenever Charles Colson started talking about the resurrection, everything got quiet. Because everybody has their own gods, but there's only one of them that rose from the dead. That separates everything. Wow. For us, Christianity, everything hangs on a marvelous fact in history, not some feeling. You know, a few years ago, one of the cardinals from over in Australia, they asked him, it was resurrection time, and they asked him, would it really make any difference in your life if Jesus really did not rise from the dead? Would that have changed anything? He said, oh, no. It wouldn't change a thing. It doesn't really matter if he was ever rose from the dead or not, because he rose in my heart. That sounds like Joel Osteen, doesn't it? The physical facts doesn't matter. So you come along and you find somebody like Gandhi or Albert Schweitzer, who were great leaders, and they said, oh, they didn't believe in the resurrection, but they admired Jesus, and he was a great teacher. He was a crazy man. Why would you listen to somebody and admire somebody who said they're going to rise from the dead, and they don't do it? He just took away any kind of integrity that he had. But they say, oh, yeah, we respect him and honor him, but we don't believe he rose from the dead. Then I don't want to hear anything he has to say. Why? Because he's a liar. Because he himself said, I'm going to rise from the dead, right? That's one of the criteria that we see. The truth of it is the verifying the claims. How is that? All students of antiquity cannot get away from the fact. They don't see this as a fabrication. The church was born out of the fact that these guys believed Jesus rose from the dead. That's it. You look back where it started. That's where it started. Pentecost, 7 weeks after the crucifixion. We have that church was born. How many people came to know the Lord that day? 3,000. 3,000. And what did Peter tell him? You killed him. You do know that, right? You killed him. I killed him. It wasn't my mom. My mom and daddy did too, but I killed him. Well, I'm not guilty. Oh, yes, you are. I don't care if you believe it or not. The resurrection absolutely solidifies the fact that God said, this is what happened. It has to be fixed, and this is how I'm going to fix it. Because you can't fix it. I don't care how many times you're baptized. I don't care how many prayers you offer. That's not what fixes it. The fix it, go back and read Exodus. I couldn't believe how detailed, again, it's been a while since I read through the whole thing, but in Exodus and Leviticus, it just shows you God was so specific. How to build a tabernacle, how many curtains it had to have, how many rings was on it, how many poles it had. Everything had a purpose. Whenever the sacrifices were offered, you know, it was a really bloody mess. You know that, right? When you offer a sacrifice, you bring the animal, the priest kills it, cuts its throat in front of you, catches the blood in a basin, pours it on the altar. That's kind of eye-opening. You know what it said to the people? God was serious. We take it so nonchalantly. Well, God doesn't really care. Yeah, blood covers it. Blood shows that it is pretty serious. And that's exactly what all that we've been talking about for weeks now, right? The church in Jerusalem grew because the people said that Jesus was raised from the dead. And that's what drove them. That's the whole thing. That's what it was about. And those are historical facts. So how do we verify that? One thing is to look at their integrity. You know, if you read the New Testament, they don't talk about just how good they are. You know, that's one thing in the Bible. The Bible talks about bad men. You know, most of us, if we write a story about ourselves, who's going to be good? I am. My goodness, I'm like that crazy man who ran into the Capitol. He saw Farrington as Jesus incarnate. Now, he's a nut. That's what he is. Do I think I'm that good? You know, bad people don't usually write about themselves. The Bible is full of bad people. These guys are talking about all these things. When you go and you look at them, do they have integrity? Are they sober-minded? Are they drunks? Are they alcoholics? You know, what are they? Do you believe a drunk? If you know they're always drunk, would you believe anything they say? If you know they were a dope head, would you believe anything they say? No. No. Analyze it. That's exactly what the guy, the policeman did. We take stock of extenuating circumstances. What are they doing in their life? How can we believe them? How can we not believe them? Look at the implications. What are they saying? Is it coherent with anything about life and death, or is it just fluff? You know, a lot of this Confucius nonsense is just fluff. It don't really have anything to do with life. Not whatsoever. A lot of it. But this is about, these guys are writing about stuff that is about their life. So you look at that. Analyze it. That's what, exactly what we do. Does their claim start to make sense out of this whole mess we're in? Yes, it does. Does it offer plausible answers to the deepest questions about why? Remember the first question Lauren said? We asked the question, why? God, why is it this way? Why does this way? Why did it happen this way? Why is that? What is offering answers to that? They're offering answers to it through the, what God gives them. There should be reasons for why we credit a person's claim. Well, he's a good old boy. You know, I'm going to believe in him, though I know he lies all the time. You know, somebody asks you about me, and they'll say, oh, yeah, Terry's a good old boy. You just can't believe anything he says. Huh? What good is that? Right? Were the disciples fools? Were they frauds? Were they lunatics? If they had stolen the body, like everybody believes, and fabricated a false thing, would they be willing to die for it in just a few months? How many would you die for just an absolute lie that you made up? Be honest. That's just not our nature. We just don't do things like that. The preaching of the resurrection could not have lasted in Jerusalem if they could have produced a body. That's why they drove it home in that movie, Risen. Pilate said, I need a body. We'll stop all this nonsense. Bring me a body by tomorrow night. That's why he went to the ditch over there and pulled out this guy that you couldn't tell who he was, but you could tell he had marks in his hands and his feet where he'd been crucified. So he said, nobody's going to know that this ain't him, so we got you a body. And he said, oh, no, that's not going to work. That's all they had to do. Why couldn't they do that? Why couldn't it? Same reason, because it wasn't there. The empty tomb was indisputable, and the only recourse of the authorities was to spread the rumor that the disciples had stolen the body. That's exactly what happened. If Christ did not rise, and they were preaching he did, it would mean that the disciples were risking their lives for a lie. It's just not normal. It's just not a natural thing for us. Jesus' own claim. That's why I got back to that Gandhi thing. How can you respect someone and really think that what they teach is right if a lot of his time he spends saying, I'm going to die, but I'm going to rise again? He'd be a fool. C.S. Lewis said that, right? You know, if he really wasn't Jesus, he was a fool or a fraud or a liar, or either he was Christ the Lord. Can't be all three of those. You know, are there any lawyers in here? Hello? I don't need one. I just want to know. Before I insult you, I want to know. All right? You know how they said this lawyer guy was buried in this, they were having a funeral, and it had on there three things. It says good, honest, and something else. And one of the guys that knew him walked up and says, I can't believe it. They got three men buried in the same grave. Because we know he ain't all those. If he said he's going to rise from the dead and he doesn't, that's just an outright lie. Lunatic. To think he's God in the flesh. I'm just hurrying through it. The empty tomb and the ability to produce a body. That's all they had to do. You know, all you have to do is give some evidence, right? Instead of make up a lie. You start lying, you better have a good memory. That's what Abraham Lincoln, if Abraham Lincoln was really Abraham Lincoln. Was Abraham Lincoln really Abraham Lincoln? Some say he wasn't. Some say he was. If Abraham really was alive, I believe he was, and that's what he said. He said, if you start lying, you better have a good memory because you're going to lie again to back up that first lie you told. That's right. That's all they had to do. If they produce a body, all of it would be over. You got to go back and look at the Roman army situation. It was not nonchalant. You know, it was serious stuff. Let's go quickly. For the sake of time, I'll have this on. The dramatic change in disciples. When Jesus was crucified and hanging there on the cross, which one of the disciples were there and how many were there? Y'all remember? One. John. The rest of them were running for their life, scared to death. Why? Because they knew the Romans would go after them next because they were his followers. They were scared to death. They didn't believe he'd been talking about resurrection. They didn't believe he was going to be resurrected. John was there because of Mary. That was the only reason. What happened just a short time later? How many times you find them up on charges because they're preaching that Jesus rose from the grave? They're out there in the forefront. They're not afraid anymore. How do you have such a drastic change in someone's life in a short period of time? There's really no other way to explain that. Here's another one. Eyewitnesses. Here's the kicker. You know, we want an eyewitness, right? We really need an eyewitness, someone who's not lying. 20 years later, Paul is writing to the church at Corinth. Boy, they had a lot of problems, okay? A lot of people, Corinth was a good church. It was a pagan church, all right? Paganism had moved into the church, and Paul is confronting all these issues. Why do you think he wrote them two letters? Actually, he wrote them three. We only have two of them. They had a lot of problems. But there were people there in the church at Corinth that did not believe in the resurrection. And this is what he said to them. He said, Christ was raised on the third day. He appeared to all these people, then to the 12. Then he appeared to more than 500 at one time. Most of them are what? Go ask them. When Paul is writing this, he says, they're still alive. If you don't believe what I'm saying, they saw him. Go ask them. It's factual, historical. And people say, well, it's not real. What do you do with all these? What do you do with 500 eyewitnesses? Just throw that aside? Some have died and fallen asleep. In other words, Paul was not merely claiming that Christ was raised. He was claiming that skeptics who really wanted to find out could go within 20 years of the event. They were still alive. You think they could remember just 20 years? I guarantee you, if you saw a man who was dead that was risen, I guarantee you could remember that one, right? Hello? He said, go ask him. Just 20 years. Now they dig up stuff that's happened, 50 years ago, and they say, well, we got enough evidence now to prove this man was wrong or he was not charged right. It was growing because of a resurrected Lord. That was it. The integrity and reliability of the witnesses. I don't have time to do all that one, all right? You go back and you read it. The life-changing power of Christ today. Are any of you changed because of the resurrection? If I asked you, could you stand up and tell me why you're not an alcoholic or why you're not a dope head anymore? That's not politically correct, is it? Dope head. I forgot. Debbie told me not to use that word. Or liquor head. It just means a drunk. We called them drunks. That's what we called them because that's what they were, drunk. I know all about that, unfortunately. How many in here today, your life has changed because of the resurrection? You know, if it wasn't for that, there's a good chance that I would have been an alcoholic. I don't know if I would still be an alcoholic because that's what my family was. You know, all my people on my dad's side, we were around it all our life. It's nothing but God's grace whenever my brother and I both as children sitting in a pickup truck on the main street in Statesboro, Georgia, when this Middle Eastern guy came by. I never heard the word Jesus before. I wasn't raised in a church. He came talking to us about Jesus, and an event took place that day that I can remember all the details in this moment, 50 years later. Everything changed for me, and that's the only reason that I didn't turn out to be an alcoholic, and that's the only reason that I didn't turn out to live like some of the rest of my ancestors. And boy, they had it down good, all right? They drank liquor, they made liquor, they sold liquor, they were wicked. I know all about it. That's it. Somebody ought to be able in this room to be able to give us a testimony to the fact that because Jesus rose from the grave, I'm not the way I used to be. Now, if you say Jesus rose from the grave and you're still the way you used to be, you missed it somewhere. Because Jesus said, I'm not going to leave you like I found you. You follow me and I'm going to change you. It ain't going to be the same way. I promise you that. The meaning of the resurrection. You know, we forget that Christianity is not a sign where God says, I really need your help. Come join me. A lot of times we think we're doing God a favor, don't we? Well, you know, God would be lucky to get me. Isn't that right? I mean, come on. Well, I'm one of his finest. Look at all what I can do. That's not what Christianity is about at all. Not at all. God does not want you to prove your strength by serving him. He wants to do something through you. Isn't that what Chronicles says? It does. The God who made the world... Let me back up to read that. The God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in shrines made by man nor saved by human. God can't be served because he has no deficiencies. He don't need you to fill up some gap that he has. He doesn't have a gap. That's not what it is. First Chronicles says what? The eyes of the Lord went to and fro throughout the whole. God is searching every day to find someone on this earth whose heart is right toward him that he can do great things through. That's what it says. He wants to do something through us. He don't need us. He don't need us for anything. Isn't that something? The Christian gospel is not a help-wanting sign. God doesn't need you. It's just a miracle that he wants us. It's a miracle that he came to save us. That's what the resurrection is. See, the resurrection validates everything God said in Genesis 1 through 3. Remember whenever Adam and Eve sinned and he drove them out from the garden? And he said, you can't eat of the tree of life. If you do, you'll die in your sin forever. So he drove them out. And he starts then, and he gives them coats of skin, covers, he has to kill an animal for it. And there's a blood sacrifice immediately, Cain and Abel. They know God demands something that they can't fix themselves. The resurrection solidifies the fact that God satisfied himself. Because you can't. Baptism can't. Church membership can't. Preaching can't. God satisfied himself. If you don't believe that, go back and read Exodus. Read Leviticus. They had to bring a blood sacrifice every time they sinned. Why? Because God had to be appeased. The resurrection shows that God was finally, once and for all, satisfied. And if we appropriate that, you see how the Old Testament is just like where we are. I don't care how much those people believe what the priest said he had to do. Unless he went and got the animal and he brought it to the priest and he went through the ceremonial process to offer the blood, he was not forgiven. I don't care how much you sit here and believe in the resurrection or Jesus or anything else. Unless you appropriate it by faith and you trust Christ, you're still doomed. You had to pay for yourself. The resurrection solidifies God satisfied himself. And he offers it to you free if you'll trust him. It's going to cost you, but it's free. Let's pray. Lord, it's just beyond our comprehension. Why you would do all this for us? On our best day, we are just so selfish. All we want is for us. Lord, convict us through this season. Remind us of how serious the resurrection is with our lives, what we believe, and where we will be in eternity. Thank you that you satisfied yourself and offered that satisfaction to us at a high price. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.